Good morning, Peter, Mr. P.
Morning, Mr. P. How are you doing, sir? Greetings. Long time no hear.
Yeah, I just observing, right?
Good. Is your bus situation under control?
Well, I glad at the outcome. And I hope that if the Democratic Labor Party do come back, it will include none of those who are on that stage at Waterford. Because I judge them to be guilty by association. When all the dirty comments were being made, not one walked away. Not one. They all stood there and to applaud. I don't want to see none of them. I know I'm going to lose a very good friend who was among them. But I think, in my mind, the national interest is at heart, not friendship.
Okay.
So I couldn't care less if that individual ever speak to me again. As the gospel truth. Like, it should not have happened. Now, I got three things I want to talk about. Well, put up there. One, Spike Stump and the bring back of Spike Stump. It can be done. Right? And one of the things of doing, one of the ways of doing it, and I think Dennis will got an idea of what I'm talking about, the bus loads that leave the north every Friday night should be, should remain in Spike Stump. That goes to Oystens. Oystens is one fishing village. You have Six Men, you have Spike Stump, you have Western, you got Pins Bay. You have to develop a way of keeping those people down there. The next thing, in my humble opinion, is the establishment of a popular supermarket in Spike Stump. I spoke to a lot of people from the north, and they all agree. I have heard the representative of the constituency say he's a people's person, and so far you have demonstrated that. I have a group of people to present to him that have ideas. They are not office workers. Please don't make the mistake that the last administration made and ignore people who is experiencing these things, who live it, who say it every day. Don't change, Colin. Remain the way you are. The next thing, transport board. I really wanted that when, I don't know if it could have been done immediately or if it would be done over time, we do not need any transport authority. We don't. We have seen the results of having a transport authority. It has almost destroyed transport board. We have now 17 minibuses on the bypass route. 17, Peter. 17, not seven. Now, tell me, how can transport board survive? Having competition from 17 minibuses.
Mr. P, you're making an assumption that the 17 minibus licenses have to do with the transport authority. If there was no transport authority...
Who issued the permit?
The point is that before somebody else would issue them the same way, when hundreds of them were issued back in the 1990s, early 1990s, did they have a transport authority, but they were still being issued?
Yeah, but they were not on one route.
Well, but there was a time that all in the IV was the only route that had minibuses. When they had a spate of issuances in the 1990s, it was all up in the IV, and it was related entirely to the Minister of Transport and Works.
I can give in to you on that, but you know what? It does not make what is happening no right.
Mr. P, listen, if you are arguing that there needs to be a greater distribution of transport along all of the routes in Barbados, I am your friend in that regard, because I think it is scandalous that there are some places in St. John and St. Andrew that people do not see a bus. There's some places in St. Philip that people do not see a bus. They see two buses a day or three buses a day sometimes, depending. And there are places where they will tell you, if you don't get the early bus, if it doesn't come, or you can't get on it for some reason, you can forget about going to work.
I think that is foolishness.
So we need to have a greater distribution where you can have 17 units on the bypass route and none on Colleton or wherever it is in St. John that it serves.
I had heard about the situation in Draxall.
Draxall is one of those places?
It used to be. I don't know if it still is. Because I've not been up there recently, because of what I did, they don't have too many buses,
yeah.
Right? I walked the whole length of draft, saw the support to residents.
But Mr.
I had
P,
a letter drafted.
Mr. P, the problem is a complex one. And I'm cutting you off because I don't want us to go over the issue over and over again. It's a complex one where there are some routes that you cannot make a dollar between the beginning and the end of the route. But the reality is that it's a $2 fare standard, and there are some routes that are not going to make it. So people gravitate towards the routes where you can resell seats.
Peter,
the solution is to increase the bus fare.
Not necessarily, Peter. No. Not necessarily. I won't go on to the CV dorm, and I'm done with the transport thing, but we're going to the CV. I went on a hike on Saturday, hosted by the Coastal Zone Management Unit, and they're doing a fantastic job. Because on that hike and on the previous hike, I've come to realize things that are going on in Barbados and CPS and Barbados that I can't remember seeing during my adulthood life. It was on several times along the coast, going to Janesway. It had cover places like Long Bay. Mm-hmm. I can tell you something, you know, Long Bay is almost not in existence anymore because of the Gaston City. I see the erosion. I spoke to Dennis recently, and I said, no, there's an idea. Ideas can be extended, whatever. But I think we need to trap this seaweed before it hits shore. It's when it hits shore that it becomes the nuisance. I saw that seaweed floating in, and it's one of the most beautiful sights. It's only when it hits the shore that it becomes very destructive. Mm-hmm. We need to get some badges. We need to get the Coast Guard involved and some of the local fishermen. It can be netted. I'm not saying that my idea is it's just an idea that can be expanded on, but we have to stop. Look, I will let you or Dennis, I know Dennis will go for sure, go and see Long Bay.
But Dennis ain't going to go Long Bay. Everybody understand that the CV situation is out of control.
But to see it, to have
no,
seen
it. No, but when you see it, is that I've not only seen it, but smell it, and Dennis too. You ain't got to go far to see and smell it. The idea of capturing it offshore, I personally think is a better idea as well. Where you don't allow it to land, period. You capture it in the sea. I think that it minimizes damage to the beach. It minimizes the possible impact on turtle eggs and so on. The problem is that you need a specialized machine to do it. And I don't know that we have that machine. Anyhow, find a word from you, Mr. P.
Let us get a hold of some barges so we can net it and put it in the barge and probably do our process.
What, manually?
With it. And,
manually netting?
Manually, it don't come in strands, it come in batches, right? But we got to do something. Right. We just can't allow it to happen.
No problem.
Nice sir, you have a nice day.
All right, thanks a lot. We're going to take a break and come right back. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. Yeah, something just crossed my mind, and this is this song that Little Rick has. I didn't want to walk up on you every saint. So that's one of the taglines. And if one interprets correctly, it seems to be, in a sense, an invitation to treat, so to speak. And against the background of an incident that we had over the weekend where we had, I think it's three policemen charged with an offense relating to attempting to sexually harass women in a party. And then I had... I make light of these things in a lot of instances because, you know, I love the crop over and I do like a wine in between. But there really is a point at which we have to appreciate that there's a level of seriousness that needs to be taken to these things in light of something called sexual harassment. No one has a right to wine on another without permission. Certainly you can ask for permission. And if the lady doesn't have a problem, then you do so. Now, in our way of doing things, often permission seeking means that you present yourself in a certain position where you attempt, and if you see yourself being pushed away or refused, then you get a look, then you move on smartly. I think that's perfectly fine. It's perfectly fine if the person says yes, it's perfectly fine if they say no. I think it goes both ways, both for ladies and for men. But there's a gentleman called the Mighty Charmer that had a calypso that said you could watch but don't touch. So maybe that is something that we ought to take on as well. So while we're listening to Little Rick, I don't want to walk up on you every since. We have to remember the Mighty Charmer's cautious words. You could watch, but don't touch. Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Blessings on to you, my brother.
Good morning, sir. And I know you ain't going to be walking up on nobody.
This is Mr. Agriculture.
That's why you say, you know you ain't going to be walking up on nobody.
I am not going to make myself an idiot, Peter.
Yeah, there you go. But now you're making yourself an idiot. It's just that's not your thing.
Yeah, but too.
No, it's all wrong again, out in there.
Yeah, but you see...
whatever age.
Yeah, but you see, the thing is, there's something called respect as well. And as you rightfully said, and I'm in a total agreement with everything that you said. I was there too when I used to go into the Alison Hines and After Dark. That was sweet. But at the end there, so you would know when somebody want that.
You used to walk up on people?
Oh, you mean they had a good time too?
Mr. Agriculture had them days.
I had good times, Bob. Mm-hmm. But in those days, you would know if a woman want a little enjoyment. Even if I went on a cruise or anything. So I used to go on some cruises too and had a good time. Mm-hmm. And I never had problems, but in all fairness too, when you look at what happened there too, and I spoke about an issue that happened to law people have no right to be involving themselves in certain things, full stop. Mm-hmm. Because they have to lead by example. And you know, they go at training school and sit down for 6 months, Peter, not 2 mornings, and go through the law books inside out. They have Yeah, but what I'm saying is that they cannot be involved in these kind of things. Because
listen, you know where you learn those things? You learn those things from your mother, your father, or from whoever else raised you. Those are the things that you learn.
Yeah, but
you can't go to regional police training center to know that you're not supposed to sexually harass people.
No, but I'm not saying that. I'm saying to you, you know the law. You know, you charge people when they break the law. So that's why I'm saying to them that they cannot be involved in themselves and sending out these mixed signals to John Public. That's all I'm saying on that. And I ain't going to talk about that neither.
No, I'm just saying that we also have to understand that a part of the problem is that people feel that by insisting that you could walk up on somebody is not breaking the law.
It is, because... And
precisely,
now,
and I'm saying that there's a perception that there's nothing wrong with that. That's part of our culture.
Correct. But what I'm saying is that there's certain things that... You're going to let your mind lead you, though, at the end of the day. That's all I'm going to say on that.
All right.
Peter, let's talk a little about Arabic culture.
Quick conversation, because
you got a lot of callers and you're short.
Right.
In your preamble, you say you were traveling.
That's right.
And I wish you safe travel. And if you see any hybrid seeds, you can bring them back and leave them at the front.
You're bringing agricultural products into this country. Want me to get a lockup?
I thought you got to make a little declaration.
It's all right.
You see, you're wild enough to talk about.
My good friend Maria listening to me on the radio, and she's working with customs. Next, you know, the search me when they come in.
Oh, Lord, have mercy. Anyhow,
you are not to import agricultural products into the country, whether it be seeds or ganja. That's my understanding.
Not me, I ain't going to that ganja road.
But right, but seeds is the same thing. You're not supposed to bring them in without permission. Right. You will apply for permission and new thing. My thing is, I leave that to the agriculturalists, and they will import it the right way. But
all right, Peter.
Not hybrid, nothing.
Good. But do you think now that we should make agriculture compulsory in the schools or no? Why, Peter? Why are you going to this rubber agriculture all the time?
But Mr. Agriculture, you call and you ask, you know what you can say.
Yeah, but no, but you cannot. But Peter, you're a man that is a vegan. And I had this conversation with you already now. Why do you like to push agriculture so far out into the ocean that it's supposed to drown?
Because my point, Mr. Agriculture, is that if it is something that could provide for itself, I think it is something that should be encouraged. I don't have a problem with people doing it, you know. It's just that I am saying that I don't see that government should provide the kind of resources that they provide to prop up a sugar industry. Or how much of $1 million a year that is not bringing in that money? I just don't find the logic. And I'm saying to you that food security can be approached in several ways. And one of them is that we can approach food security in this way, that we have enough foreign exchange to buy what we need.
Yeah, but you look at the import bill, Peter. Come on, Peter.
But the point is that the import bill is high, and I don't really know that our investment in sugar is helping. Yeah, or whatever other agriculture we have.
Yeah, but Peter, you cannot only look at agriculture from a sugar standpoint because you go back as an old Democratic Labour Party man to tie up with Barthes there that he would come and tell him one day that not a clean beer will be seen on the islands of Barbados.
No, it's not only that. Mr. Agriculture, I have experience in Trinidad and Tobago. They shut down their sugar industry, right? They got acreage that we can't even dream about, and they shut down theirs. Guyana right now is struggling with theirs, and they may very well close on theirs too. Same problem. Acreage, cheap land, cheap labor. Antigua does not have one and has not had one for years. St. Kitts and Nevis does not have one and has not had one for years. St. Lucia is struggling with the little bananas, but that's probably going to come to an end just now. The point is that I don't know a lot of people. Jamaica is developing a ganja sector, and that may very well bear fruit. We don't know.
But my point is that
show me the Caribbean island where agriculture has improved and has become a shining light. In St. Vincent now, the agricultural thing may very well become, again, a medical ganja industry. But outside of that, I don't really see the agriculture shining light that you're talking about.
Yeah, some people that the ganja problem, I have no problem with that, because who want to smoke, they smoke. And if you could pollute something to help the cancer patients and the persons with pain, I don't have an issue with that neither. And we are looking to do it here as well, and I would like to hear your thought on that too. But what I'm saying is, Peter, you can't only look at agriculture for what, because at the end of the day, are you going to eat the sand and the cement and the stone? And I have a serious problem that so much good agriculture land has gone up for housing and commercial buildings.
You can make
and
golf courses.
And as a vegan, no, Peter, but as a vegan, you see that not eating healthy has caused our health sector to dwindle over the years. So I cannot go and side with you to say that agriculture is not something that you have to look at much closer. You have to look at it closer because it is viable.
Miss Agriculture ain't got no problem with that. The thing is that most agriculturalists is also raise pigs and things. So
yes, but
I would like to encourage people to stop doing that foolishness. But I mean, it's not for me to say.
You're going to come now and blambaste the pig for sales, but
precisely.
Do you understand the amount of revenue that pig farmers and egg growers and chicken suppliers make, and they employ so much people?
Yeah, but they wouldn't employ them. They wouldn't employ them if people didn't eat it. It's because people eat it.
No, but Peter, can I sit down here as an agriculture man who is passionate about agriculture, and I know a man that has education near Peter Wickham could come and try to derail John Public from engaging in agriculture?
Miss Agriculture, I am not discouraging anyone who wants to get into it than from getting into it. But my point is that when you have all of this arable land that is lying idle, it speaks volumes. It speaks volumes to the fact that people are not interested in it. All I am saying is that what you need to do is embrace the fact that Barbadians are not really interested in it. Look, let's get on something that we can probably discuss that would make sense. This whole question of the future of ganja in Barbados, right?
Yeah.
My personal feeling is that we are behind the curve where that is concerned. The question of selling ganja and making money from on it from a commercial standpoint, in my opinion, is a boat that has sailed a long time ago, right? The medical marijuana industry, Canada seems to be a major buyer. The Americans can supply their own needs internally. The Canadians seem to be looking for cheaper sources. They are already in discussions with Jamaica. And what they can't get from Jamaica, they will get from St. Vincent. And that, understanding is that that is the plan. So my position now is, when Barbados gets into this ganja business, what market are we going to exploit? Right? We consume ganja in terms of the social aspect of it and so on. And maybe we can fulfill that need. But the challenge is that the moment that ganja is decriminalized, ganja is going to become like another agricultural product, like potatoes and yams and whatnot. And the only reason that people is be clamoring to sell it now is because they can make so much money. If ganja is decriminalized and you can make no money on it because everybody could grow it in the yard, you have essentially killed off that market. And people will grow it for their own consumption. But I don't really see it as having any big commercial value.
Yeah, but do you think that this we are going to allow each and every single individual to grow ganja?
That's what happened. That's what Antigua did.
No, but cannot do it like that.
But why not? The route Antigua took was to essentially allow everybody to grow 10 plants, right?
Yeah, but what? But Peter, that does not help. What I'm saying is,
what do you mean? There's help.
Listen, I am not pulling down what you say, but understand it from my end too, as a man that knows the soil, and my fingers are good with everything I grow. And I'm saying to you that you cannot, Peter, don't get on that road with me to play police can't dig up my place. I'm on national radio today. This is a serious conversation we're having with you, Peter, man. Don't do those kind of things to agriculture. No, I ain't got the luck already. I am saying to you, Peter, that we have to allocate certain lands and make sure that it is secured for growing of the marijuana for the purpose of the patients who need it, so that they can extrapolate whatever they need from it, send it to the lab, and they do what they have to do for the medicines, Peter. So you're not going to allow every single person to come and say, well, look, plant marijuana as vanilla and do the dog in Barbados. That is a no, Peter.
But why not? What's the danger of doing that?
You cannot do it like that.
No, but what is the danger of doing that? Because that's what Antigua has done.
You're going to get reckless.
What is reckless?
What you know proposing, that's reckless behavior.
But why do you call it reckless? Explain to me why it is reckless.
Because
the government of Antigua has taken a position that every Antiguan national or citizen or resident or whatever could grow 10 plants in the house or outside the house or in the yard or wherever. What's reckless about that? And you know what? It is such that if I can't grow mine, I ain't interested in growing a ganja. You can grow my 10. So you can grow 20. And you could probably grow Dennis 10 too, because he ain't smoking that neither. So you can grow 30.
Keep it. They would drink it and it's helped them. That's
which
what you hear.
Fine, right? Yeah.
I never drink none. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying to you, and I have no problem with who smoked marijuana or who I got a problem with.
No, but we ain't talking about that. We're talking about the policy perspective from agriculture. We ain't talking about who doing it. And I'm saying, why is it reckless to have a policy that says that the individual can have 10 plants as distinct from having a policy? Because I think that that is where Barbados is going. When Prime Minister Motley talks about decriminalizing medical use, right? Yeah. We are talking about creating a market for medical use. And in my opinion, what we are doing is creating a problem for ourselves. Is there this foolishness with the thing when you are register a car? Get away from all of that. Because then what we will have is everybody clamoring for medical marijuana. Everybody will be in a doctor's office for a prescription because they want to go and smoke a joint.
Yeah, but Peter, you still have below. I don't believe that. We have
examples, right? You look at what happens in Holland. You look at what happens in a few other European countries now have gone that way as well, where you can go to a coffee shop and you can use your ganja recreationally and so on. All hell has not broken loose.
No, but Peter, I understand what you're saying. There are people that hold high office that use marijuana every day, but you don't see that up on the road for the block, not nice smoking. But I can tell you.
You can smoke in the house.
You can smoke in the house, I enjoy it. I have no problem
precisely
with that. But I'm saying to you, listen to what I say, Peter. Listen to me carefully what I say. I am saying to you that I do not believe decriminalizing marijuana is a fact of life now. That you should not be locking up there giving young people criminal records for a 250, a 5-piece, or a 10-piece, or even a 20-piece.
Right.
You have to give people a gram or a quarter ounce or anything
Mr. Agriculture,
on their person at a time.
Mr. Agriculture, the point is in order to get to that stage, you have to procure it from somewhere. I am saying that if you want to deal with the procurement issue, then just let everybody grow 10 plants. The difference between what you're saying is you want a control release, right? If you read the CARICOM Commission's report, the CARICOM Commission's report basically says, look, we are playing games with this thing. You know that up until recently, right, you could go to a nightclub. You could drink yourself into oblivion. Again, I can't go and drive. It's only recently that people say, no, you can't do that no more.
But that's my point.
And to me, that is more dangerous because I know people that have gotten extremely sick from drinking alcohol. I am fortunately not one of them. But I've gotten very sick from drinking alcohol. I never heard anybody that gets sick from smoking ganja.
Yeah, but Peter,
how do you overdose on ganja?
You cannot, but what I'm saying to you
precisely,
is that,
so it's not that dangerous a drug then?
No, I'm not saying, you never hear me say that it's dangerous. I am saying to you is, why will you now say I can identify with? Right. Because people out there drinking rum cardon, drinking beer cardon, and they're doing the dog with the alcohol.
So tell me, Mr. Agriculture, if you don't limit legally my alcohol consumption, I could go and buy a gallon of rum and drink it all. You're not limiting that. But you tell me that I can only smoke a gram of ganja. What's the difference?
I never tell you that you could only smoke
right, and
a
the point
I'm
making is to get away from all of this foolishness where police got to be weighing and seeing whether you got. I see this guy it's that got holy the other day because them people push their head in the man car and smell ganja in the man car.
Well, Peter, you know what I say? I say you got spark somewhere.
No. And listen, and my thing is the Antigua route.
You can't come to a decision.
The Antigua route is the route that I support. Because I am saying that if you are looking at it commercially, that ship has sailed already, Mr. Agriculture. Yeah. I don't see how we can attempt to make money from this thing. What we could make money from perhaps is ganja tourism, right? Where people want to come off a boat and they want to sit down in a cafe and smoke a spliff. Listen, I have friends, right, that leave London and get on a train and cross to Amsterdam just so that they can smoke a spliff or two in peace.
Yeah, they could do the dog there.
And leave and go back. No, I'm saying that if this is what people are interested in doing, I don't see anything wrong. You come off the boat, you come off smoking ganja, you get back and you go on. Right?
But we are on the same wavelength.
The point is that if you are going to look at it commercially and you're going to say, how are you going to make a commercial benefit from that? The commercial thing is in relation to the environment that you create for the person to smoke or whatnot. But the actual supply of ganja, the quantities that you are going to need, are not such that any farmer going to be making any big set of money off of it. So this is the reason why I like the Antigua route, where the Antigua has said, look, you can have your 10 plants, or you can designate somebody to grow on your behalf. And essentially that deals with it. It cuts the import market because nobody needs to import ganja anymore because you can grow it locally. But it gets away from this whole idea that this thing has to be a commercial thing where, like, for example, in Jamaica, they issue ganja licenses. They're extremely expensive to grow ganja commercially. That's not happening in Antigua because they're approaching it differently. And I'm just saying that we could save ourselves a lot of trouble. Approach it the same way.
Yeah, but Peter, what I can say, you have me off for a little while, I can beg a little for just a little more peace. Mm-hmm. I understand you from the 10 plan issue, the 20 plan issue. I have no issue with people who deal with marijuana, but it needs to be decriminalized. The law courts are backed up, Peter, today. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of ignorance, and they call it ignorance.
I agree with you. Huh? We agree on that point.
Yeah. So we need to sit down. We need to sit down as a people, and the my new government, which I know the direction they're heading in already, and I don't want to go overboard to talk things that I should not talk. But this matter will be addressed. It will be discussed in the House of Assembly, and we got to come to some kind of decision on it. Because as you rightfully said, it needs to be debated, and it needs to be debated like 5 years ago. Because it has gone to a point where it should not have gone. Right. And Peter, I want to thank you for your time and have a safe trip, and God bless you.
Okay, thanks a lot, Miss Agriculture. Maria, before I go, Maria is just reminding me that apparently public servants can work outside. They just have to seek permission of the ministry. Once you get permission from the ministry and it doesn't prevent you from performing your regular duties, certainly permission can be granted and has been in the past. This is Dr. Brass Stats. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Dr. Brass Stats. That's an interesting ganja comments. I think people know this is one of my pet areas. Peter, as a law enforcement officer for the last 31 years, I can tell you that the established drug gangs will never allow their clientele to buy somewhere else. They will do whatever it takes to maintain their market share. That comment is particularly interesting, sir. I believe it is a gentleman. Largely because of my familiarity with the Sir Vincent case and the fact that the strongest voices opposed to decriminalization, you heard me correctly, the strongest voices in opposition to decriminalization are some of the ganja growers themselves. Because for them, the market share that they want to benefit from is more attractive where it is criminalized and you are essentially making a better living in that way because the prices are inflated. When you do what Antigua has done, essentially kill, and I think that as a law enforcement officer, I'm interested in hearing your response to this argument. What Antigua has done has basically killed the import market because it essentially has created an environment where you can have all of these small ganja farmers all over the place supplying small markets because ultimately the recreational market is not huge. And there's no question of the criminal activity associated with procurement. So I think it should make the law enforcement's job a whole lot easier. And it makes it very difficult for a drug lord to control a turf because ultimately a turf can be anywhere because they said it can be anybody's house or anybody's yard. Another comment related to the fact that the two colleges in Ontario, Durham and Niagara, both in Ontario, they offer degrees and certificates in commercial marijuana production, perhaps sometimes CAFIL will do the same thing and earn foreign exchange from doing so. You hold your breath and wait for that. But you know, the point that we're making here is that we are late. We have missed the boat. We could have been making money from this thing, and instead we were up and down the region locking up people for growing it and whatnot. So yeah, we have to get on board. Final comment. Good morning, Peter. What will happen to the women who come out of the ban and walk up on police and soldiers along the road? Will they be arrested too? It's interesting that you said that because as we were at the break, this is exactly what Dennis was saying. He was also referring to the man that walked around with the sign that said free walk-ups. But of course, if you have a sign that says free walk-ups, that's an invitation to treat. I'm not sure what soldiers and policemen do that encourages women to come and whine on them to try and see if they can provoke them. But perhaps that too is sexual harassment. And we have to get away from this idea that sexual harassment can only happen one way, man to woman. Sexual harassment can happen man to man, it can happen woman to woman, and it can happen woman to man. So, yeah, it cuts both ways. Dr. Brass Stats, good morning.
Morning, Peter.
Hey, morning.
Yeah, I want to discuss some politics with you, Guyana politics, though.
Sure, good.
Yeah, I heard you mention something about the PNC need to make an apology.
That was a comment, a historic comment, sir.
Yeah, but I just want to let you know that the politics in Guyana is different from the rest of the Caribbean.
I hear that in every country.
Yeah.
I hear that in Nevis. I hear it in Montserrat.
All right, well, you listen to me and you can get where you're going. The PNC could not win a democratically held, free, and fair elections in Guyana without support from the PPP faction. It does not happen. In Guyana, you got something called Aponjat. You know what it means?
Mm.
You know what it means?
Mm-hmm.
Vote for your race. Mm. And I told a minister who was around here, he's now a minister in the government in Guyana now, that it could not happen without help from the PPP. And he told me, yes. And he saw it couldn't happen. It don't work.
But what did you hear in terms of the comment that I made on the situation that suggested that I didn't understand that Guyana politics was very racial?
Making an apology for the past infractions. It don't work.
So you're saying that the apology is irrelevant because it's all about race?
Yes, it wouldn't work. It wouldn't work. It would not work.
Fair enough.
I am telling you, I'm a Guyanese. I lived there most of my life. It don't work.
So I understand that Guyana politics is very racial, you know? I understand that fully. But I'm saying that if we're going to discuss the policy modalities, then we also have to look at the extent to which a perspective on policy may very well contribute to a political opinion in addition to the racial factor. So the racial factor is there. That's one thing. I acknowledge
that. Very strong. It don't work. Yeah. And the PNC would not have lost an election if Burnham didn't die. Because there's no democracy when Burnham was alive.
Mm.
The votes used to go into the defense force. Nobody can go in there and count. And when it come out, then he tell you what the votes are. So that is the way that is. So I just want to let you know, it's a different factor. Unless the PNC get support from the PPP, the break-off faction, they would never have won the election. Because when thing came into power, he had to change the course after Burnham died. The president, I can't remember his name though, but he had to change the course because free elections are no money.
Mm. Well, you know, the whole thing has changed a whole lot now because you have the PPP Civic, you have the PNC, which became the PNC Reform, you have the breakaway from the two of them, which was the AFC, and now we have the APNU, which is the group.
Oh, that's which is, they don't mean nothing. They're like,
but the point like I'm making...
The parties voting.
Which is fine, but the point I'm making though is that the PNC core remains, but it has been augmented by an Alliance for Change group and also by various other factors that would have been embraced under the PNC reform.
Mm-hmm. So that's all I wanted to mention to you because it was worrying me.
All right. All right, sir. Thank you. I'm always happy to discuss the politics of our region. So anytime at all you want to raise issues like that, I look forward to hearing from you. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Good
morning, sir. How are you doing?
Two bad greetings and salutations to your guest.
Thank you.
I ask first your permission to begin my submission by first quoting Psalm 12, verse 1. Help, Lord, for the goodly man ceases, but the fearful fail from among the children of men.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Wickham, I like to associate myself with your preamble. Your predictions are coming true from what you had said pertaining to the British Prime Minister at that election almost 2 years ago. With that reduced majority. I don't know if you could recall exactly what you had said, but it is coming true. Mm-hmm. However, Mr. Vickham, sir, I put that aside to get on with what I really wanted to say this morning. You recall earlier this year, during our conversation, it had been drawn to your attention by the humble servant that His Grace the 13th Bishop of Barbados was demitting office at the ending of February this year. Your response, I never knew. And I thought that you were going to say that the woman is going to become bishop. What now is going on in the difficulty in getting the appointment of a bishop? I am seeing a division in the Anglican Church. I said before that the church has to revisit the canon rules and regulations. I am not in favor with the importation of a bishop where he would have to be advised and tutored by the administrator or by the archdeacon. He would not be in position to give directives to the continuation of the refurbishment of the Church of the Cathedral of St. Michael's and Holy Angels, the laying of the cornerstone for the new St. Joseph Parish Church, the construction for the official residence for the bishop, the refurbishment of the rundown church properties, namely the churches and the rectories. If men of the cloth find it difficult to choose one of their own, in the words of a former British Prime Minister, Mistress Margaret Thatcher, when you want something said, ask a man. When you want something done, get a woman. We know our privilege to get women of the cloth, and one should come forward to break the deadlock. And I'd like to see the rector of St. Augustine Anglican Church, the Reverend Susan Ellis, offering herself. She was instrumental as being chairperson commemorative committee. Her presentation for the commemorative magazine, whereas in congratulating the 30th bishop, the most reverend, the honorable Dr. John Holder, Reverend Susan Ellis quote from Revelation 4:11, "Thou art worthy, O Lord."
Okay, sir. Thank you. And I certainly would want to lend my own voice of support to the goodly reverend. I think that it's time that we had a female bishop along with a female prime minister and a female head of state. Why not? Let's throw in a female bishop there for good measure. And if the idea is that she's a tiebreaker, then that would be a wonderful thing.